Everyone, this is Erin Prather Stafford with the Girls That Create podcast on Word of Mom Radio. We're kicking off Women's History Month with Chelsea Gooden, author of Underestimated, The Wisdom and Power of Teenage Girls. Gooden has been an academic tutor and mentor for 16 years, particularly emphasizing the empowerment of teenage girls. She speaks regularly to audiences about gender justice, conducts workshops, and coaches parents on better understanding and connecting with their daughters. Gooden is the mentorship director of Democrat She, a nonprofit dedicated to inspiring and empowering female-identifying high school students to become future elected leaders. She is also founder of the Activist Cartel, where she guided an influential nationwide subscriber base to take political and social action for gender and racial equity. As an activist, Gooden advises public figures, galvanizes volunteers, and organizes large-scale events for national nonprofits while also serving on the board of A Call to Men, which is working to end gender-based violence. Her passion to explore humanity's potential for authenticity, liberation, and empowerment permeates all of her work. Welcome to the Girls That Create podcast, Chelsea Gooden.
Hi, thank you for having me. I'm so happy to be here.
So as a mom of two girls, one of which is very much a teenager, I really enjoyed reading this book. It really resonated with me as someone who's thought a lot about the topics that were discussed, but it gave me an idea to kind of see and what the girls are thinking, because, of course, sometimes daughters are not always wanting to share everything with their mothers, and the mothers think, I just wish I could figure this out. I wish I could just understand what's going on, where are the wheels turning in there. So I really thoroughly enjoyed the book and appreciate you writing it and giving kind of an insight to what girls in 2024 are thinking.
Yes, thank you. Yes, that is my goal, is to be their portal and their microphone to the world.
And your book starts by diving straight into how society stereotypes teenage girls, which I found really interesting. And I want to read a couple of sentences from the intro. Out of that fear and lack of understanding, we squash the liberated, fierce, passionate spirit right out of that bright, smiling, limitless face until she's consumed by perfection and pleasing others, until she's lost in a blur of teenage angst. We squash, and consequently, I've come to learn over years of working closely with teenage girls, we've been squashing a wildly underestimated force for the good in the world. And that passage made my heart ache because it almost made me think about how many girls were untapped, their brilliance, their beauty, what they could have offered because of how we as society, as you mentioned, squash things. And I want to go into what were your inspirations for writing this book? And can you tell us how you became an academic mentor and tutor for teenage girls and kind of realizing that this is going on?
Yeah. Well, the inspiration comes directly from the girls, right? I kept being wowed by the things they would say to me in our one-on-one time. And I was like, that was so wise. And then I would tell them that and they would be surprised. They'd be like, wait, really? And I realized that there wasn't a lot of space for them to share their thoughts on things, as much as, you know, adults in their life have good intentions to ask and questions, what's going on. There was something about how I was able to create space for their voice in a way that they felt safe, like a psychological safety, an emotional safety for them to open up and share their thoughts. And that was what I wanted to offer to people who are working with girls, primarily in service for girls, so that they could actually step into their power as well. And I got started, honestly, it was 16 years ago. It was a side job. I started tutoring and turned into my own tutoring company. And then I started volunteering my time to mentor girls from underserved communities as well. And it ended up being the most meaningful part of my day. I was writing on the side. I was writing screenplays and I live in LA. It was a real pie in my face moment when I realized the stories that needed to be told were the ones right in front of me all along. And that was the most meaningful use of my time. And so now I couldn't be more excited to let them tell the world what they want to say.
What were you like as a teenager? And did that actually, were you kind of reflecting about yourself as a teenager as you were hearing these stories told from different perspectives of girls experiencing their own teenage years?
Of course. Well, I think an interesting part of the book too is you don't have to necessarily have a daughter to really connect with it, because there's a lot of healing your own inner teenage girl that you have inside of you. And so that's what happened for me. The more I experienced my time with the girls, the more I reflected on my own time as a teenager, the more I realized how I struggled with perfectionism, how I struggled with people pleasing or self-doubt. And then I started healing that, in that how I showed up for them. That is also a really valuable part of reading the book. A lot of women are like, oh my goodness, this is for all women. And honestly, dads really like it too, because it is a much more kind of fun, engaging. It's not a hard-hitting parenting book, you know, where it can be so dense. This is has a more levity to it.
I appreciate that. I feel like I was kind of having a conversation and listening in on conversations and not being lectured to. So that was very well done.
Thank you. Yes. Yes. I actually put conversations in the book I've had with real life girls to model what that looks like, that opening up for them and them sharing.
Tell me about your view that teenage girls' feelings are like a punk rock band with lots of electric instruments.
I know that teenage girls, again, back to the stereotypes, get stereotyped as emotional and dramatic and crazy. And these are really negative frames for them when a girl hears that and they feel squashed by it. But their feelings, when you actually make room, and the very first chapter is feelings, right? And teenage girls are renowned for their big feelings. And I have come to revere their feelings and how they share them and how they express them. And yes, they can be like a punk rock band where they're kind of a little messier and a little bolder. And I actually believe all humans have big feelings. And as we go into adulthood, we learn how to repress and squash our own feelings and bottle them and contain them. And there's something really liberated about a teenage girl being able to just be like, I don't know, I'm upset by that. And I'm like, yeah, you know what? You should maybe be upset about that. That's okay. And so often we're so scared of a girl or a woman being annoyed or angry or these displeasing feelings that there's not a lot of space for us in the world to be angry or upset about things, you know, because we always have to like put on a nice show of appearances of a nice lady. And girls hear that messaging, but a teenage girl is still in the throes of that and working that out. And so I talk about holding space and just listening to those feelings and reflecting them back without trying to fix them, without trying to slap some positivity on them, without trying to come up with a solution to make them feel better immediately. And instead I'm just like, yeah, that does sound hard. I totally understand why you'd feel frustrated. And then the girl relaxes and she's just like, oh, thank you for understanding. And that was all she needed. She just needed someone to listen. And that's how we process feelings. And oftentimes they help them name the feeling too, which in the back of the book, I give a feelings wheel, which helps you just name feelings to help process them.
I think it's also helpful for as a parent and a caregiver, because when there are those big feelings and they're being expressed and you almost go, oh my goodness, this is so out there. And is anyone seeing this? And what's going on? And then there's something about even naming our own feelings about that. Well, why do I feel so, you know, kind of wanting to withdraw from her expressing that? Or why do I feel, you know, embarrassed? And that's not, and you kind of think, that's not her. This is on me. Why am I feeling that way?
Oh, that's so wise. You're really naming something so important, which is I find we tend to slap positivity or try to solution or fix because we can't sit in our own discomfort that girl in front of you is in pain. So she's having a hard time in that moment. And so we're uncomfortable about it, or we're getting triggered in our own way. And what I've learned is exactly what you said. It's like, that's a me problem, right? Like I got to go figure out that trigger so that I come to her with peace and hold that space enough for her to process her feelings and not make it about my own discomfort.
It's almost like I survived high school. Wait, I'm not there anymore. I've moved beyond that. Maybe it's reminding me of something, but I'm okay. I'm past that. Okay. How do I kind of go back to the conversation to your point and just be there with her in that space and be like, I'm just here. I love you unconditionally. Here
yeah.
I am.
And I'll even ask, I'll be like, do you want me to just listen right now while you vent? Or do you want thoughts and advice? Like I always phrase everything as a question, which is a big part of the book and how to open a girl up is to just always have curiosity in the phrase of a question, non-judgmental tone. And that's what helps so much.
And try not to fix everything.
Yes.
One of the book's chapters is titled Choice, which kind of actually lends into what we just said. Why should we invite and respect teenage girls' consent and choice as we help them navigate adolescence? Why is it important for them to feel there's actually choice?
Right. So if we do come at them with a solution and try to fix, what happens is the girl usually puts up a wall and is like, whatever, I got it. Like, I'm handling it. And she won't receive your solution anyway. By phrasing things as a question, one of my biggest go-tos is, well, what do you think the solution is? What are your thoughts on that? What do you think the next step is? And when she self-generates her own solutions to problems, which is really activating her sense of choice, her sense of agency in the world, then she wants that to work out. She wants her own choice, her own solution to work. So she's more committed to it. And then when it does work out, she feels empowered by that. So often we think we're teaching a girl the best way to do something by telling her the right choice she should be making. And I find it ends up being pretty disempowering. And that when we just ask the right questions for her to figure out her own solution, she honestly has better solutions than I usually come up with. I'm always pleasantly surprised.
You also mentioned a subject, and this actually makes my blood boil. It's the policing of girls' clothes. When I got to that part of the book, I was like, oh, because I've had my own experience in junior high, and I have no doubt many of our listeners have either experienced it or know someone who has. How does policing clothing feed into that larger narrative of controlling girls, and especially with their sexuality? Because it's something I see time and time again crop up in the news media. Suddenly, there was a dress code. Someone broke the dress code, or my favorite, people rallied against the dress code and they got it, you know, changed.
Yes. Oh my gosh. And the teenage girls will tell you themselves, like, dress codes are one of the biggest topics they love to talk about and that they fiercely hate. This topic is something they're so passionate about. And it's because when you tell a girl, well, first of all, the amount of stories, right, that we have a girl is like her bra strap accidentally showed at school. And then all of a sudden I've had girls sent home for that, yeah. Right? And what they're telling that girl is that her body is something to be ashamed of, that it's dangerous, that she needs to manage a boy's attention, that it's her responsibility to do that when it should be a boy's responsibility to manage something like that. And meanwhile, boys might have their boxers showing on their low jeans and no one ever cares. I mean, there's a huge double standard when mm-hmm. it comes to a girl's sexuality and what she's wearing and what it communicates to the world. And that's a societal lens. And what's happening is the girls consequently feel judged and shamed by it. And shame does nothing good for girls at all. The more we can rid out shame out of any conversation, the better. And specifically shame about her body, which of course lends to so many problems. And then shame about her sexuality, which is a topic, again, parents have a lot of discomfort with, right? And them trying to navigate, how do I talk to my daughter about these things? But what I always tell parents when they say, you know, how do I talk to my daughter about these things? I'm like, well, why are you uncomfortable? Figure that out first for yourself. It's kind of that same conversation, you know, you got to heal your own wounds to be in a place where you're like, hey, and can have these kind of non-charged, more non-judgmental conversations. But in terms of the policing of clothes is something that it covers all the boxes for a girl. And I would say the large of issues that come up and the struggle she's having, it could be everything from her anxiety to her self-doubt to her relationship to her body. But I will say most of all, it creates shame, and shame is toxic, which, you know, there's a whole chapter on shame in the book.
Absolutely. What my offense was that my shorts were too short. The dress code was that the shorts had to be as long as the tips of your fingers. And so someone took the time to pull me aside and measure and said that my shorts were not past my tips of my fingers and stuck me in really grungy, terrible gym sweatpants for the rest of the day. And I was embarrassed and I was shamed for that.
Yeah.
And I felt so good about my outfit because I thought it was, you know, it was cute. It was fun. I was all excited about it. And then now I'm in grungy sweatpants.
No, and yeah, there's a physical ramification. The girls always talk about being hot in a sweater on a hot day. And I do understand, you know, parents are worried like, oh, if she puts herself out there in that way and shows that cleavage, then she's putting herself in danger. And it's not that I'm trying to undermine that. I actually, in the book, try to like, let's go one step further and understand why is there male violence in the first place and sexual harassment and all these, you know, it's not the girl's fault. The girl, we shouldn't be putting the responsibility and the fault all on a girl for basically changing an entire culture that has been, you know, there's been toxicity around this topic to me, the book, that chapter specifically is about like, well, let's figure out how we parent our boys differently and let's focus on that.
Absolutely. And it kind of lends into the next part, which is about perfectionism, which you're hearing that a lot now, that buzzword, because there's a lot of anxiety amongst our teenagers. and especially amongst our teenage girls. And perfectionism is a kryptonite to girls who want to celebrate their uniqueness and they want to celebrate what makes them so wonderful. And all of a sudden, though, they may feel that they're just not quite enough. How can we help our girls understand that they just don't have to be perfect? Because when I talk to parents, a lot of the times they're like, I don't want her to be perfect. Like, that was never my intention, or I don't know where she's thinking I demand this from her.
Yeah, that's fair, because I do know so many well-intentioned parents that aren't putting as much pressure. I mean, I know a lot who do put a lot of pressure on girls too. And I will say, to me, the perfectionism is one of the biggest things with the anxiety that we're seeing in teenage girls. I think, again, a societal narrative that girls need to be perfect and pleasing in order to succeed in life or be liked. But in terms of a more practical parent messaging, I say be very vocal about it. So I'll actually say to her and like, hey, what have you got a C on that paper? You know, by the way, she doesn't usually end up getting the C. So it's not like I'm trying to tell her be mediocre or this type of thing. It's really just a constant permissioning that she has worth and value, that she has nothing to prove to me. So I'll be like, what if you got a C on that? You have nothing to prove to me. I know you're amazing already. And she'll often respond in shock. Like, that seems like a radical statement that I'm saying that to her. And emotional too. Girls will get emotional when they feel that they don't have anything to prove, that their value is intrinsic. So to me, it's more just saying it all the time, the type of messaging. And so there's the compliments chapter of the book. I give a lot of real specific ways to affirm a girl in that. So it's not just, we're just achievement focused affirmations, because we fall into that trap, whether you want to or not. It's, oh my gosh, yay, you did get the A. Like, we feel like we're helping with confidence and stuff. But when you don't realize how much of your affirmations were achievement focused, yes, you're not necessarily pushing her to get that A, but your affirmations land that way. And so she hears that, whether it's subconscious, she's hearing that when she does well, like, she gets attention, she gets love, she gets care. And so a lot of it can be under the radar, you know, not so overt. And so in the compliments chapter, I talk a lot about different ways you can affirm a girl's uniqueness and specificity and quirkiness in a way that she feels more seen and heard and valued because of some tangible outcome-oriented thing she did.
We're going to take a short break to hear from our sponsors.
I'm Scarlett Johansson. My family relied on public assistance to help provide meals for us. These meals fueled my involvement in theater and the arts as a child, which fostered my love for acting. The Feeding America network of food banks helps millions of people put food on the table. You can join the movement to end hunger by donating, volunteering, and advocating. Because when people are fed, futures are nourished. Join the movement to end hunger at feedingamerica.org/act now. Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
And we're back with the Girls That Create podcast on Word of Mom Radio. My guest today is Chelsea Gooden, author of Underestimated, The Wisdom and Power of Teenage Girls. I think about the Barbie movie. That is a movie that somehow tapped into something bigger than itself. People seem so shocked, but when you watch it and that perfectionism, I see that piece. It's the monologue that the mom is giving about the perfectionism. And I think that's one of the reasons it did so well, because so many girls and women just saw themselves, heard themselves when she was delivering that. And sure, some people kind of criticized it as over the top, or that was just so, oh my gosh, feminist woo-woo. But I really do think there's a reason that just struck so many hearts when people watched that scene.
It totally dialed into a cultural conversation and the struggles women face. And part of that monologue too is like, we never get it right. We're never, you know, we're too sexy, or we're not sexy enough, or we're, you know, too smart, or we're not smart enough, or, you know, it's just a losing battle, it feels like, all the time. And so that's where it comes into, again, back to kind of dress codes. I often ask a girl when she does wear something a little sexier, and a parent can be like, wait, oh my God, what do you want to feel right now wearing that? Like, what do you feel like you're putting out in the world? What are you exploring? What is this vibe that you want to explore for yourself? Just so she and the parent both understand the deeper intention behind it. Because actually, a girl exploring a sexy look doesn't have to be a bad thing. It can be a really empowering thing, but it has to be under a really healthy context of communication and understanding and respect. Like, when a girl feels like you respect her thoughts on things, it's game changing.
Speaking of that, when you're talking to a girl, why is the word fine the worst thing your teenage girl can utter in your direction? How are you doing? Fine. Are you upset about this? I'm fine. What's going on? I'm fine.
Yes. That's in my people-pleasing chapter, which to me, fine, is a very sneaky people-pleasing answer where it's like, you know, we think of people-pleasing as big four smiles and like things that are a little more overt, but actually when a girl is just like, fine, or even women do it too, it's making sure you're not a hassle to anyone, that you don't have any needs, right? Like you're handling it yourself. Because if you had a need, then you might be annoying or a hassle and maybe not easy and pleasing in the way that everyone wants you to be perfect, right? So fine is often the word. I have girls tell me horrific stories of things going on in their lives, and then they'll be like, but it's fine. And so I usually respond by like, well, it's not fine. That wasn't fine. That's awful. Like, do you want to just sit and say how awful it was? Like, I can hold space for that. And that's it. We don't have to do anything about it. We can just like vent about how awful it was. And she'll be like, what? Wait, really? And it takes some trust, right? Some it's a progression to get into that space. But yeah, usually she'll just be like, yeah, it was messed up. And then you're also teaching a girl what is and isn't fine. Where lots of times I find adults in ways are relieved sometimes by it's fine, because they're like, okay, yeah, she's fine. Because everyone wants their kid to be fine. And they know you want them to be fine. And so a lot of things are brushed under the rug. So unless we kind of create some just chill space for it, doesn't have to be so dialed up. If she's sharing something hard, it doesn't have to be dramatic. It doesn't be like, oh my God, that kid is, you know, it can just be like, yeah, it sucked. You know, yeah. And then that's it.
Yeah. I saw a big fight at school. It was really disturbing. It was kind of wow, I can't believe that happened, versus, oh, it was fine. School was fine.
So yeah, I usually respond with, yeah, it's not fine. But that's, you know, what do you want right now? Do you need support? I often ask too, what kind of support do you need in this? And I would say, you know, girls first start off not really knowing how to answer that. But the more I ask it and the more I kind of ask curiosity, you know, would it be supportive of you to vent about it? Or I'll just say, how can I support you in this? And sometimes they have great ways, but lots of times they respond with just, you listening is great.
It's almost like if you ask them enough, they have a time to kind of process and think about that. What do I need? What actually do I need?
What do they need, right? Because it's fine is denying their needs. And so when I say, how can I support you? They have to check in with themselves. And that's a process that isn't happening in the people-pleasing world, where you actually just check in. Do I want to do this? Does this make me happy? Do I want to hang out with these people? Do I want to spend my time doing this? Like, just checking in and asking yourself that is so good.
Speaking of that chapter on compliments, in addition to focusing on the power of compliments, you note that we as women actually need to think about why we have such a hard time receiving compliments. That's not just girls. Actually, we as women, and I often think about, you know, someone says like, thank you for doing such a great job on that project. Oh, it was nothing. It's always, I try so hard to not do that, nor do I, when someone says that, say, no, really, thank you for doing a great job on this project.
Yes, I know. It is such a thing. and to just say thank you also, I mean, just the practice of saying thank you. But then the next step is like, yeah, I worked hard on that, you know, and kind of owning it also. So that's kind of even the next step. So when a girl will brush off something, I'll always take a beat. I'm like, whoa, hold on. I actually want you to receive this. And I'll tell them, it brings me joy to have you receive my compliment. Like, I think that when we brush off compliments, we think we're being a lot. Again, we want to be easygoing and stuff, but that taking up space. So again, I have to permission it. I invite it. And so I'm like, no, let's actually acknowledge for a second that no other woman went above and beyond and did that, right? You did. Can you just say that and own that right now? And I'll get a girl to kind of say it again and say it out loud with a little more, we'll play a game, encourage her to be cocky and brag about it just so she can feel that energy space and lean into it. And it's fun. And then her whole persona changes when we do things like that. And she's just like, because she hasn't been invited to do that. A lot of girls share with me how scared they are about being seen as cocky or having an ego. And that messaging is intense, and that carries through all the way to adulthood and imposter syndrome that women face. And then I don't see that with boys. The boys are like, yeah, I was great at that. Yeah, you were. Cool. Great. You know, I'm so happy for the boy that actually he can own that. And I just want that for the girls too. And so I'll bring up how boys own it, and they totally see that themselves. And I'll be like, what if we pretended you responded like a boy? What is that like? And then that's kind of fun to play with too.
Absolutely. It's over on the Girls That Create site. It was born out of a desire to help girl creators grow up to be big contributors to the mainstream media. And I love this passage from the chapter title media in the book. In order to expand the current limiting messages of what girls should be, we need to be creating media that empowers all types of women and advances BIPOC and LGBTQ plus representation.
Yes.
And I would love to just hear thoughts on girls creating it and why it's important to consistently talk about the media with our girls and what we're all consuming.
So I think the media is the way in to so many awesome in-depth conversations. Is there a world where we could be mad at the media for this and that? Yes. And I'm going to kind of address that because they're giving us limiting options. But first and foremost, I want to say that's a huge opportunity. If you just watch a TV show with your daughter or something, that's where you're like, hey, why do you think that girl liked that guy? You know, you just ask with curiosity. Again, no agenda. Don't have an agenda in your brain around it. Just curiosity. Or why do you think he's into her? And just start asking, kind of get her thoughts on the more mature topics that are brought up by a TV show sometimes. And that to me is the way in. I had really incredible depth-filled conversations with girls just talking about who loves who on a TV show and why. But what's happened is a lot of girls don't feel like they're being represented. Their stories are being represented. So oftentimes this commentary, this discussion we're having is like, well, that was stupid. Like, no girl would do that. Or like, well, that girl was too obsessed with that boy. Like, she's better than that. You know, they're not seeing the type of empowered characters that they want to be themselves. And so by discussing it with them, they can question it also rather than being a victim to it. And so by that active questioning, then to me, that's where there's so much growth. But yes, the chapter also just calls to the larger societal narrative of you can't be what you can't see. And when we don't see these types of characters on TV shows and in the media, then it's hard to imagine yourself doing something like that.
I think, too, there's, you know, the complexity of girlhood being a teenager that gets lost as well, because it's, you know, trying to very much, again, as you said, pigeonhole into these stereotype characters.
Yeah.
And girls are everything. Like, you could be like, you have pieces of your personality. You could be all sorts of different characters.
Exactly. Yes. Right. They can be all things. And also, I mean, even more specifically, like I've worked with many Black girls, but one I remember so well telling me how Grey's Anatomy changed her life. Because she then realized she wanted to be a doctor, because on that show, at least half the doctors are people of color. And that was, it's still so, you know, dynamic and progressive in that way that they've done that. But that's a super tangible example of a girl literally telling me she didn't see herself as a doctor until she watched that TV show and felt like someone that looked like her was a doctor. And she said that to me innocently. It wasn't like she even understood what she was saying. And I was like, this is what I'm trying to tell the world.
Like, more representation. It can be really hard for families when their girls, actually speaking of this, grow into new identities. I think that's hard for parents because all of a sudden you're like, you were wearing jeans and now you want to wear dresses, or you liked horses and now you like computers. And it's like all these changes as girls are trying out all these different identities of what they're into, as you said, kind of like what's their scene. And that can be kind of jarring for a caregiver parent who's, where are we going? What's happening here? Where is this going to take us? What advice do you have to kind of support that identity journey that's going on during those adolescent years?
Yeah, that's a good question. By the way, I'm loving your questions. You are so insightful with this. Well, there is the identity chapter, right, which is all about making space to explore. So what I talk about in that chapter is how we need more space on both ends. On one side of the coin is making space to do things she's bad at. Also, we are so achievement focused in our culture that when a girl ends up being good at one thing, we tend to just lock her into it. And all of a sudden she's doing soccer every day of every hour. And she may not want to be doing soccer at every hour, but because she's so good at it and she's getting affirmed, like, she thinks that's kind of her only choice that she should be doing. So what happens when a girl explores things that maybe she's not immediately perfect at or good at, there's this, certainly in the arts, there's this beautiful self-exploration that happens. There is value in doing things that you're not incredible at. And then on the other side of the spectrum is taking up space and owning space of, like, kind of what we already talked about, the imposter syndrome of it all. And a girl being like, no, wait, I like this. I'm into this. And really being more bold about her pursuit. So an example is fashion. I have so many girls who love fashion. And it's interesting. Parents always think that's kind of just a silly thing to be going for. And that is just not the truth, because I have had so many girls now graduate, go to study in college, and then get incredible jobs in the fashion industry. The fashion industry has plenty of jobs, right? And for some reason, a girl sketching in her notebook her fashion designs, parents don't think that's worthwhile. But by permissioning a girl and letting her take up space and own it bigger and better and more, I've seen girls, you know, take up sewing and take sewing classes and all of a sudden designing her own pieces. And then she puts on a charity fashion show at her school where the profits benefit this like sustainability fast fashion nonprofit. You know, like these girls are creative. We are underestimating them, right? That's the name of the book. And so by actually rolling with her exploration rather than thinking she needs to be this or that to succeed in life, she will step into her own passion and fuel it into things that you won't even see.
I think it's back to that space of to give them the space to lead you versus you, because it's hard. You have to let go and realize you can't just keep leading them. You actually have to let them start leading you about what their direction is going to be. Actually, why should we ask our girls this simple question? What do you care about?
So, well, it ties back to that passion, right? So when I talk to a girl, like, what do you care about? What are you into? You know, lots of times this conversation can be around us doing working on an essay for a college application, and we realize, what is it that you care about? What is it that you want to say to the world, right? But it also could be figuring out after school activities that she wants to get involved in. And when I just ask, well, what is it that you care about? Like, what makes your heart hurt that wants to help the world, right? And again, no one's really asked her to think about it, to check in. And they'll often, you know, lots of times animals will come up or fashion or all these different things that when they take a beat and they think, okay, wait, what do I care about? And then I'll be like, is there a way you want to help the world with that? Make the world better. And they like that question. Girls, again, that's where the underestimated is. I believe, and the wisdom and power of teenage girls, I believe their natural inclinations can fuel so much positive change. And so the more we ask them to check in with what they care about, their vision for a better future is better than our boxes we've been living in, right? We only know kind of the culture we're in. They have a fresh brain that the more you invite to give ideas, it's so exciting.
I think too, there's power in just realizing and saying, you know what, this is kind of messed up. Why is it like this? Why have we not changed this? I've experienced that from my own teenager. What's going on here? Why is this not better?
Oh my gosh. I know. I love when girls do that. I mean, my 8-year-old niece, we were just at lunch the other day and all of a sudden she's just like deep in thought eating. She looks up and she goes, wait, why is there Mr. and then there's Mrs. and Miss? Why do we have to say that a woman's married or not? And I was like, great question. And she's like, and then she goes, why don't we do that for boys? And I was like, right. I'm glad you're asking that question. It's interesting, isn't it? And it's not that I'm even trying to position her in any certain way. I just love that she's questioning it and thinking tapping into what she thinks would be right for the world.
That critical thinking. Last question. What are 3 things you hope parents and caregivers will take away from reading your book?
3 things, you said?
Yeah, let's go 3.
Okay. I'm doing this on the fly. I'm just going to check in. What do I think right now? First would be do whatever you can to get rid of judgment inside your heart. However you might find yourself judging your teenage girl, that is blocks everything. It blocks connection. It blocks her growth. It blocks, it's not helpful in every capacity. So, and it takes some self-reflection and it takes some self-awareness because we are judgy people in general. And so that's number one. Number two would be, you know, I'll just give like a super practical one. So we haven't talked about the beauty chapter. I would say bring a lot of awareness around how you talk about your own weight, your own beauty around girls and a daughter or any girls. And then, and specifically even I talk about little girls, how you compliment little girls. We right away are like, oh, what a pretty dress. You're so cute. That's always the first thing we say. And it's well-intentioned, but of course we are, the very first thing we are telling her is that her worth is tied to her looks. And so girls are listening. The average age for a girl to start dieting is age 8. That is horrifying. Mm-hmm. And so I actually see, you know, moms all the time being like, oh, I'm got to eat healthy now, da da, and just kind of these tiny subtle messaging that is telling a girl all the time that we should either be dieting or that we should look pretty all the time. And so bringing awareness around your own language when you're around girls. And again, I'm trying to do things right that are in your own control. Sure. Because we can't control the girl. So I'm trying to name things that you can do that create a better, you know, an environment that helps her. And then I would say that we haven't talked about is I bring up in the conclusion amends, making amends with mm-hmm. your daughter. And this was something I didn't see coming, you know, when I was writing the book and asking girls, by the way, very much speak into this book. For those who haven't read it, like there's a lot of quotes directly from girls. I used them the entire process. They helped edit it, everything. So what came up is how often they would love to feel like their parents said, apologized for something, owned their mistake, took responsibility for it, and actually just said, hey, I'm sorry about that. And it could be in a huge way that they're hoping for, you know, like bigger life amends, or it could be just on a day-to-day practical style, which is you are modeling for your kid how to take responsibility and that mistakes happen. And that, because so often we just think, again, we have to be perfect and we all mess up. We're all human, and showing that humanity and then owning it and then having this integrity of saying sorry models such healthy behavior for the girl. And I found that girls are just starving for this type of exchange with their parents. And in like a bigger, heavier way too, things that may be hard to confront that have happened, you know, but I have found unbelievable healing moments when a parent is like, hey, you know what? Like, we didn't handle the divorce that well. I'm so sorry. Like, that girl will respect you saying that to her. She'll probably be emotional and she'll be so grateful.
The book is called Underestimated. Chelsea Gooden, thank you for being with us on the Girls That Create podcast today.
Thank you. I love this conversation so much. Thank you so much for everything you're putting out in the world.
To all of you tuning in, thank you for joining us on the Girls That Create podcast on Word of Mom Radio. Let's all make the time to listen, truly listen, to teenage girls. They can teach us a thing or two. Here's our closing theme song by Smith Sisters and the Sunday Drivers. Till next time, this is Erin Prather Stafford.
She is sure.
She is sure.
She is strong.
She is strong.
She is true.
She is true.
She is brave.
She is brave.
She is bold.
She is bold.
She is you.
She is you. She is you. She is you.
She is sure.
She is sure.
She is strong.
She is strong.
She is true.
She is true.
She is brave.
She is brave.
She is bold.
She is bold.
She is you.
She is you. She is you. She is you.
Sure of herself. Yeah, she takes care of biz. Powerful and yeah, she knows who she is, has integrity, woman strong and true. You know her by name, see this woman is you. She is sure,
she is sure,
she is strong,
she is strong,
she is true,
she is true.
She is brave,
she is brave,
she is bold,
she is bold,
she is you,
she is you, she is you,
she is sure.
She is sure.
She is sure.